Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Randy Fine. I am your show host. Entrepreneur, mother, and 9/11 widow Lisa Luckett was one of thousands whose lives were forever altered that fateful day with a clarity that only comes with time and distance. Lisa discovered the resiliency and beauty of the human spirit and vowed to not allow her husband's death to be in vain by making something positive rise from the ashes of this tragic nightmare. With a warrior's will, Lisa Luckett took the opportunity to reframe her struggle and pain into a fast track for personal growth and positive change for herself and for her family, which was young at the time. She is a 9/11 widow and a breast cancer survivor who knows the value of life's struggles and sees the silver lining in every situation. She wants to show others how to fight for emotional stability and mental health. Now, on the precipice of 9/11's 17th anniversary, well, actually, it's after 9/11's 17th anniversary, Lisa is sharing her perspective and life experiences in her new book, The Light in 9/11, Shocked by Kindness, Healed by Love. So let me introduce you to my special guest today, and we'll get started. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Randy. It's so nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
It is such a gift to have you with us today. And I really wanted to make this a special week and really focus on the anniversary. I can't believe it's been 17 years. It's just crazy. But let's start with the day before this all happened. And, you know, we all think that we want to make sure that we say the right things and do the right things in case, you know, we lose that person in some crazy way. But the day before this happened wasn't such a great day, was it?
No, not at all. In fact, it was my husband and I at 10 o'clock the night, September 10th, had probably the biggest fight of our marriage. I had just had my third child. I had at 40 years old. I had just had my 41st birthday on September 3rd that year. So I was now, you know, tired and lactating, nursing a four-month-old. I had two kids in preschool and school. So life of the young family was busy, and I felt like I was drowning. And my husband was challenged at work with his job, and we were just kind of stuck in that place where you can't see the light, you can't see the end. You're just immersed and submerged under the responsibility of a young family and the finances that to run it and to, you know, basically step into and mature into your role as a parent. And so I didn't even know that I had postpartum depression to the level I did, but that's where I was. And we, Teddy came home because he had asked if he could, if I would mind if he would go to a sailing regatta down in South Jersey. I live in New Jersey. And the following weekend, he called me from work that morning, and all day I stewed over that and couldn't believe he'd even ask me. And we didn't have help, and I didn't want to spend money that way. I knew how privileged I was to be home with my kids and not have to work, so I didn't hire babysitters. And as a result, I was really frustrated a lot. And so this was the pinnacle of that moment. And when he got home, I said, wait a minute, you know, how dare you call me and ask? I never get help with the kids. The weekends are all that we have. And, you know, I just know. And so he heard me out, which he did so well. And then Teddy was my husband's name and was just the loveliest person and not a fighter. And I am a fighter. So the perfect yin to my yang. And he listened to me and he let me vent. And I felt better, at least to the degree that he heard me out and said to me, well, I'm sorry you had a bad day. They just fired 20 more people from our desk, and just my friend TJ and I are left. So we were both in really bad places at that time. And when I heard that, I realized it brought me back to center. And so much of this story is important because it's really about being heard. And Teddy was perfect for me in that way. He did not combat me, you know, and meet me toe to toe. He let me vent, and it always rounded off my edges. So, and I kind of brought him up to a more motivated place. So we were better together than we were apart. So that night we were able to go to sleep in our customary spoons, and I just didn't, you know, I could relax. And in the morning he got up and he left really early to catch a ferry actually to New York. And it was about 5:45. And I said, you know, you are my soulmate and I love you and I'm sorry. And he walked out the door, and that's the last time I saw him.
Wow. Wow, that's powerful. So what was that morning like for you? How did it start off?
Well, so my daughter, who was then 7, her name's Jen, she was not, had been fighting a virus, and I took her to school a little later than usual. So I walked back in the door about 9:05, and I had my son Billy, who was 4 years old, and my little guy Timmy was 4 months old. So as I walked in the house with them, the phone was ringing, and when I answered, my friend said to me, you know, what tower is Teddy in? I said, the one with the antenna. Why? And she said, and I quote this because I find this so remarkable. She said, well, turn on the television because a plane just hit it and took off the top 15 floors. So she didn't ask me what floor he was on. So what she had told me was he was dead on the ground because he was on the 105th floor, 2 stories on the top. So when I turned, I ran to turn the TV on. I saw the building, but it was intact. So I actually had this bizarre moment of hope until the next second I saw the black smoke and how thick and you could tell the rage and the fire. And Teddy had walked down in 1993, so I instantly knew this was much worse. And the bombing in 93, I mentioned that because there was no smoke showing outside of the buildings in that bombing. And when Ted got home, having walked down from that 105th floor office, which took 4.5 hours, he was covered in so much soot from the smoke that was in the stairwell that the water ran black for 5 minutes because he was, you know, so dirty. When I saw the fire from the second bombing, I knew he was gone. There was no way anyone could survive it. Plus they said, oh, we'll go to the roof if it happens next time, or we'll keep, you know, gas masks in our desks, you know, if there's a next time. And then I think as I wrote the book, I was like, wow, why didn't we even listen to ourselves the next time? Like, are you kidding? So yeah. And so that morning, you know, anyway, that's to answer your question. That's what happened. And so I brought my kids in, and the boys and I were watching the TV right as the second plane hit the second tower, and I knew we were in trouble. So
I cannot even imagine the feeling, because I know how I felt watching it come down, and I had no loved ones in that building, in either of those buildings or anywhere near there. So I can't even imagine the feeling that you must have had. But you were saying in your book that you were a helper, and instead of letting people help you, you wanted to help everybody else, right?
Right, right. Well, and your show is about healing. So that's really the most important part of all of this is, you know, this happened to all of us. And the question is, how have we healed? And my story, the reason, you know, I felt it was worthy of telling is because it's different than most people's, because in the strangest way, I was actually prepared for Ted's death. So after a couple hours after the buildings actually had fallen, and that's all part of the story, there's about a 15-page story of the morning of 9/11, while the book is founded in 9/11. It's not really about 9/11.
Right.
It's really about how 9/11 became the catalyst for me to experience remarkable personal growth. And I say that because it starts in this part of the story. So I introduce you. So, you know, yes, it starts in this way, but it's really much more about where it took me. So I was... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, so, yeah. So where I was going with that was it was really... in that moment where you surrendered that need to help everyone,
yes.
that the healing began,
yes.
right?
Well, and that came to me in what I learned much later was an intuitive download.
Okay.
So this is really a spiritual story, and I'm not religious. That's not my. I don't come from that angle. I didn't really have an understanding of God to a place where it comforted me until the morning of 9/11, and I was sitting. So when I saw the buildings burning and the second plane hitting, I sat on the couch with my boys, and I don't know what I did, scream, stomp my feet. That's what my little one, Billy, told me. But I don't remember that. But I do remember waking up moments later, kind of awake, you know, coming back to reality and saying, wait a minute, the only thing that matters is my kids. And I just have to trust myself, because it was immediately clear to me that all the rules were broken. Nobody was going to know what to do. And our world just changed and shifted on its axis. In that, I mean, this is within 10, 15 minutes. So, like, you get this knowing, you get this understanding of your situation, especially in extraordinary trauma and peril. We as humans have this heightened awareness. We really have the sixth sense, the intuition, your higher self really does function when your human self is challenged like that. So that's what happened to me with effortlessly. I was standing in my dining room an hour or two after the building fell, and I was looking around at all my neighbors and friends who were just desperate in their terror, in the fear, in the pain, the shock of it all. And, you know, maybe I was in shock, and I'm sure I was, but maybe because everybody else was reacting that I didn't have to. You know, when you're the one it's happening to, it's a very different position than the other side looking in at me. So I just wanted to help them, and I couldn't get my head around the fact that Teddy was potentially dead. I mean, your mind just won't accept it. I mean, I could see it logically and stuff, but that wasn't where I went to. I was in the experience of our country being attacked as much as everybody else was, because I had this heightened sense of awareness, because I had been prepared for Ted's death because of the bombing in 93, where he'd already faced terrorism, where we'd already, you know, sidestepped something that no one paid attention to at the time, and we arrogantly swept it under the rug and didn't really think anything of it and forgot and went back into two, you know, extraordinary targets. But I also had a mother-in-law that would tell me he was going to die of a heart attack every time I saw her because she was worried for his health. So what that made me do was run his death through my mind hundreds of times, and I am here to tell you, we can get ourselves just as worked up at the idea of an event as the event itself, because the human mind is very powerful. And sometimes we actually make it worse. And what I mean by that is we never see what comes with it. We never see the unbelievable beauty and support of the kindness of strangers, the friends and neighbors that come in to help us. And they always do. And it doesn't have to be a 9/11. It can be anything. Anytime, you know, people see you suffering, they will be there for you. But we have to allow them to help us. We can't block them, which gets into another part of this subject. So in that moment when I realized I wanted to help them, but all they wanted to do was help me, and there was nothing anyone could do, a voice of knowing basically said, Lisa, let them help you. And that was the last thing I wanted. You know, I'm a product of the 60s, 70s, 80s. I'm a woman, you know, I am woman, hear me roar. You can't, I don't want your help. I can do everything. I'm a superwoman. Well, I had to let go. And I knew the pull of it was so strong. I let go and I dropped my guard and I surrendered. And in that moment, I was overwhelmed with the unbelievable feelings of gratitude, humility, and this love that has never left me. And it was all from showing my vulnerability. Which ultimately, in now 17 years later, I can tell you, is the finest, highest act of courage.
I agree with you. This is a very powerful part of the story for me and many of my listeners. Because, you know, as someone who works with narcissistic abuse victims and survivors, many of these people are the kind of people that are they want to help everybody in their life before they help themselves. And so this message is so powerful for my listeners, and I really wanted to make sure we talked about that. And I know it was the beginning of your healing and the beginning of just your entire future and all that you do now.
It
can you tell
life.
Us? Yeah, yes. Absolutely. I love the story, and I know this is really important too towards the work that you do now. I love the story about the coin. Can you tell us about the angel coin? Yes.
Of course. It's my favorite as well. So about three mornings after the buildings, after 9/11, so it was still that week, my house became a little mini ground zero. In the sense of it was by the afternoon of 9/11, it was pretty clear who wasn't coming home, anybody who was above the fire. And we had a lot of people in this area because we had an easy commute to Wall Street by boat from here. So a lot of people worked for the same company, Cantor Fitzgerald, which lost 658 people. So everybody who worked for Cantor was at risk and died, actually, who was there. So everybody was at my house, like at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning, people would start showing up. And I had my baby and my 4-year-old, and my 7-year-old. I had my parents. I had people swarming me. My phone didn't stop ringing for months and months and months. So I couldn't leave, and it was killing me not to leave. I can't explain to you how much I needed to go into the city to find Ted, because I'm a warrior. That was my city. No, I'm going to cry telling you. So I'm so frustrated because these people and everything is in my way. And I'm not rational, mind you. This is irrational, but it was the truth. So this friend of mine walks in the kitchen who I didn't know well. He went to church with me, and I knew them that way. And he was a firefighter from the next town over. He was the chief of the firehouse at the time. And he walked in with his hand in his pocket, and he stood next to me in this very quiet way, tall man, and I could see he was struggling. And he straightened himself up in the next breath, and he said to me, Lisa, I was at Ground Zero yesterday looking for Teddy. I had this with me, and I want you to have it. And he opened his hand, and in it was this little coin with an angel embossed on it. And he said, it's a pocket angel, which I'd never heard of before. When I touched that angel to take it out of his hand, overwhelmed with this body chills and dizziness and the sense that I had been there, and all of a sudden, I was calm, and I didn't have to go.
My goodness.
Yeah, it was truly mystical. So from that, 5 years later, which is all – that's a huge story in between this, I started making these little whimsical hearts out of clay because I was playing with my kids, and I'd gotten some of that polymer baking clay that you can make little things out of. And I said, I'm going to make pocket hearts because the pocket angel meant so much to me. And because of the energy and the way that came through me, because my whole next 4 or 5 years were years of digging through analysis and understanding the why of everything, I determined within days of 9/11 that there was no way I was going to let Ted and all the others die in vain. That I would make something good come from it if it was the last thing I did. If I didn't, then the terrorists would win, and that was unacceptable to me. And the terrorists, unfortunately, they still have a leg up because the fear that was instilled at a cellular level that morning is still with us. Because 2 years went by where we had beautiful unity in the world and beautiful patriotism and camaraderie, and all the emotional walls were down and societal walls. And then we sealed back over, but without anybody having ever really emotionally exercised the pain and the understanding of what happened. We didn't do any therapy. And so that's my theory, as you asked 17 years later, kind of one of the reasons why our world seems to be spinning out of control. I believe much is rooted in the fact that we have not addressed the fear factor that it was instilled in us on the morning of 9/11. But the pocket hearts, to bring you back to that, the pocket hearts I've been giving out as a random act of kindness, and I pay them forward to basically say, this is the love energy and all the beauty and grace that came to my children and I in the years that followed 9/11. And to this day, by the way, I still get unbelievable love because people know my story. So one of the things is, and I say anytime someone will listen, everyone has a huge story. You just don't know it.
That's true.
Because we have been cultured to not talk about ourselves, to not ever talk about our families, to not ever talk about that dark thing. Well, that's why they keep perpetuating, because we keep them hidden.
True.
So the pocket heart, there's probably 40,000 now out in the world. I give them away. I've just talked about them on TV, and I get, you know, people want them. Unfortunately, I can't sell them because that would mess with their magic, but they do carry the magical energy, because anything handmade with love and purpose carries magical energy for no matter what it is. That just happens to be mine. And that's why we're going back to crafting, going back to things where we make things, retouching back into our humanity, especially now in the offset of technology. You know, we're so worried because things are becoming so isolated and becoming so technical, right, and so cold. We need to, and I conjured a brand of kindness that talks about tactically going back into our humanity, touching into our sensory input. So.
And that is what Cosmina is, right?
That is what Cosmina is, yes, which is another story. But please, I didn't mean to go off your track.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
It's a lot to explain.
It is a lot to explain and not a whole lot of time to explain it. But I want you to share.
I want to go back to the
heart.
Healing, though, because that's important. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very important. We are going to go back to that. So, and I would love to have one of those hearts. So you'll have to let me know how I can
I'll
have
send
one.
You one.
Okay.
I'll send you one. I wish I could send everyone one. The postage alone, I'd be at the post office literally buried. But one day we'll make pocket heart kits. There's a whole story for that because it's in the making where the energy is. And if people want to give them, they need to make them. And I will sell a kit. I can't sell the hearts. I can't make enough to satisfy people anyway. And I would never have them manufactured because that would completely miss the point. But to have a kit where people can learn to make them themselves and give them out. And we have a project of creating a kindness app that will prompt you to perform a random act of kindness. And through that, we will sell the Pocket Heart kit. So that's on the horizon.
This is excellent. Oh, my gosh. The world needs this so desperately.
Yeah.
Thank you,
and
Lisa.
It's so easy.
This is amazing.
Randy, it's so easy to do. It's so easy to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's the easiest thing in the world. I don't know why everybody has such trouble with it. Not everybody, but, you know, we can turn this around. We really, really can.
I agree with you. The work I do is for the same purpose. I completely agree with you. And it comes out of trauma and tragedy that we are sparked with this amazing healing energy. And I see this all the time. With those I work with, I see it in myself. I think it's amazing. And, you know, and that wasn't the only trauma you had, because then, 8 years later, you were diagnosed with breast cancer, which you got through, right?
Absolutely. You know, that's a subject we could talk about for hours as well. The breast cancer for me was a test to see if I had, in fact, learned a skill set for trauma management. And the answer is yes. You know what? Life experience is teaching us to do whatever, prepping us for whatever's coming next. Teddy walking down in 93, his mother telling me he was going to die, prepared me to handle his death. So the morning of 9/11, after the initial shock, by 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, I was standing there calm and fine because I had thought it all the way through. Because we actually have that skill set. instead of, and in the world that we're living in now, again, current day, we're talking about trauma a lot, and it's man-made, and it's coming from nature. We have such a big storm coming now tomorrow. You know, the bottom line is trauma is not like when, you know, if, it's when. And instead of constantly being in this place where we're tipping on the edge of the abyss because we're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? The answer is lots is going to happen. Let's back up and prepare ourselves for it. And remember that we really control nothing. So just let go. Enjoy the day we're in. Be grateful for what we have because we have a lot. And it's just a matter of spinning that. And to just, I want to just touch on something you said before. Trauma, yes, trauma is a huge catalyst. And if we reframe trauma, if we reframe pain and reframe struggle, everything changes. So instead of looking at, this is where I've gotten to and where I would love the world to get to, instead of seeing the struggle, reeling from struggle, but leaning into it, instead of saying, why is this happening to me? Just change the preposition. Why is this happening for me? What am I supposed to be learning here? What am I being shown? Because there's a lesson in every single struggle. In fact, we are actually on the planet to experience contrast. We're not here to have a good time. We're here to learn. And we learn through struggle.
It's the toughest university we could ever attend.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And we can figure this out. You know, you and I, on our path, and by the way, I've had a lot of experience with narcissistic personalities. That's part of, you know, I went to analysis and I stayed for years because there's nothing more interesting than studying your life and the experience and events of the people in it. Not for blame, right, Randy, but to understand.
I have a feeling.
Right.
Reading your story, it was like, okay, I get it. You don't have to say a whole
sure.
lot. I got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and there's, you know, and we all feel like we're so unique. Well, the truth is a lot of us are experiencing the very similar things, especially sensitive personalities.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for us, you know, we're born into narcissistic families. I was born into one, but people marry narcissists. And we're, you know, there's always two sides of the situation. Why did I attract that person? What about that person attracted me? What did they fill in me that I don't have myself? Good, bad, or otherwise. You know, so much of this is just out there. These experiences are showing us how better to know ourselves and that self-awareness that comes from really starting to understand who we are in all of our faults. You
right.
know, loving the bad stuff is really, really a good idea. That's when I finally figured it out. It's when I learned that.
I'm with you. You said that so well. It's absolutely true. And you say, you know, for years you looked outside of yourself for validation when you were the only one that knew what you needed. And this is something that many survivors struggle with, because survivors of all kinds of traumas, because many of us are used to looking for that external validation. And it is these kind of situations that force us to find that internal validation. And that's not an easy thing to find, right?
Or it actually is the effect of a cause and effect. It's the outcome of the trauma when you wake up. And the wake up is, oh my gosh, I have everything I need. Why am I trusting other people to decide for me? Why am I giving up my power? How could they possibly know what I need? How could I possibly know what they need? I can't tell them what to do. They need to know what they need to do. But our culture and our family set systems from our culture have been telling us that we know more than you, so listen to us. Well, the reason there's so much insecurity on the planet, and one of the reasons, my theory, is that we have no footing. We don't know who we are. How can you possibly be grounded on a foundation when somebody else is deciding what it is?
So true. It's so true.
Right?
So this is a time, yes, you know, telling your story and building this company, this foundation, is such an important thing for us. And we need these messages. We all need these messages. So many people are hurting, but this is such a beautiful message and one that I know is and will wake up lots of people.
That would be a dream come true. Because honestly, Randy, I just want everybody to be where I am. And when I say that, what I mean is I live in the moment, literally, with gratitude, humility, and grace. I don't judge anybody else. I don't criticize anybody else. And I don't judge and criticize myself. I do, but not remotely as much as I used to.
Right.
And kindness is my rule. Love is my rule. I've navigated away from toxicity, which is fortunate for me. I don't work for a company. My kids are grown. I've gotten out of all the relationships that pulled me off my course, which, P.S., were all the close ones, family mostly, a bad choice in a boyfriend afterward, you know, because you go to what's familiar until you get exercised, and that's like exorcism. Exercise it out of your body by studying through analysis, which is what you're doing with your patients. You know, that's – we have to – we are not born knowing this. And we're all so equal, we're all so different. At the same time, we're similar. So it's such a fine line to walk to figure it out. It's the ultimate puzzle. But to me, I find it so inspiring to figure it out. It's just the most fascinating game in the world. And what better thing than to play, right? So if we just reframe this and say, wait a minute, whoa, let's back up. This is a really bad day, but I get a reboot and I get to start tomorrow. So I'm going to stay in this day because the outset, tomorrow's anxiety, you know, yesterday's regret. All I can affect is my day today. Try to be in the moment, take deep breaths, and just enjoy it as much as I can, even the bad stuff. And I've been in this joyful moment with this book on, you know, unfolding and being recognized and going out. At the same time, I have my teenager going off the rails simultaneously. I'm moving. I put a move into my life of a 21-year house to a downsize 3 weeks from now. What was I thinking? Clearly, I wasn't thinking. But the point is that it's not like it's all good. It's never all good. You're just juggling, and it's the depth and richness of the experience. That's what I'm trying to communicate now, is it's not about going for happy. Happy's like that birthday party. It's about the joy of seeing a beautiful sunset in that moment when you hurt so badly. And being able to recognize the joy in that beauty.
What a gift your message is. What a gift you are. Beautiful.
Thank you for having
me. It's so beautiful.
I love you all.
Yeah.
I'd love to give you all hearts. If I could, I would.
Yeah. You know, so tell us about the Cosmina concept. A little more about it.
Thank you for asking that question. All right, so this is kind of, again, nothing I tell, unfortunately, is short. It's all story. And my biggest problem is I have this memory for detail. So I'm trying hard to learn how to tell these things succinctly. So here we go. I jump into it. I realize in those first weeks after 9/11 that no one knows what to do. All the rules are broken. And here I'm in this place of self-trust. So I go, I'm going to just trust what I think I should do, and I'm going to go get some help, because this is the equivalent of having every emotional bone in your body broken simultaneously times millions of people, mind you. You would go to the doctor for your body, so I went to the doctor for my mind. So Teddy, and again, against all the grain, against swimming upstream, this was 17 years ago, nobody admitted going to therapy. One thing about 9/11 is it did open the window of people seeking help more than ever. Even though it's still deep in stigma, it's definitely beginning that crack. You know, it's getting that shell's getting cracked. So
I agree.
Thank God, right? And again, this is what trauma does. It is going to. It's an opener. Trauma is an opener. Maybe 9/11 was actually a birth canal. AIDS was a birth canal for gay rights. That's a whole nother conversation. But you know, it's just reframing how we look at things. That's the silver lining I'm talking about. The title of the book is, you know, Finding the Light in 9/11, because it's a choice to see it. What are you learning from this? I'm not saying it's going to be as big as the magnitude of the pain, but there are these unbelievably small graces that come in all of it. And they combine to make a lot. And they keep you from tipping into the abyss of hopelessness, is the power of the kindness of strangers, letting yourself receive. So I'm on the couch in the therapist's office for 4 years. And in that time, she says, the only way we can really do deep analysis is very, very old memory. So about 2 years in, she said to me, you know what? We can't finish your therapy until we get your father out of the room. And we can't get your father out of the room until you stop drinking. So I fight that for a while. I ultimately stopped drinking, which is another story. And a year later, I'm laying there one day in November of 2005. I don't know what she said or what I said, but all the pieces fell into place. I literally saw the puzzle pieces, in visually saw them in my mind, falling into place and wrapping the world. And I sat bolt upright and I went, oh my God, all we have to do is be nice. Everything
it's
will be
so
fine
simple.
if we can just be nice.
Right.
Period.
It's so
done.
Simple. Period. Right. It
period.
Is.
Period. There's no, but yeah. In the second breath, I went, oh my God, who is taking care of women? No one is taking care of women, meaning no one is taking care of the caregiver. Because at the time I had school-age kids and I saw my friends and I and everybody was submerged under their families and not sustaining or restoring or doing any kind of, you know, anything we asked for. We were told we were selfish. The message to girl children in our culture, I was born in 1960 from my 50s mother and my grandmother from the Depression era. You're a selfish girl to ask for anything.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
So, you know,
and I think
that can be a loud message or a subtle message.
It still goes on today. It still goes on today. And it's not just women. It's anyone who chooses to take care of themselves.
Right.
Anyone.
Well, because it's shown as weakness. Right.
It is, and it also is, how dare you take care of yourself? But it's the only way, because we can't take care of others unless we take care of ourselves. It's so important. You know,
right.
I have to point out really quickly, your birthday is September 3rd and mine is the 4th.
Yes.
We have a lot in common.
Oh, I love that. So that's the best part of this whole thing, and I want to make sure people hear this. The greatest part of this life is watching it unfold. And the charm of just you telling me that. Of just the fact that we're two Virgos, you know, having this conversation. And so we're so passionate. Virgos are so passionate and so loyal, and we so believe and want to help.
Yes.
We really have that wired into who we are.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's an honor. Thank you. I love that. That makes my day.
I do this show because of who I meet and what I learn. You know,
yes.
This show,
it's all about
I
that.
Mean, and everyone else benefits from it, you know, but I just fill up with the most beautiful information and I meet the most beautiful people. So that's why I do what I do and why I've been doing it for so long. And
why I do
I
what
have
I
a million
do.
Other things
yep.
to do, and I still do the show because I love it.
Right.
I love it.
Well, it's your soul food.
It is. It is. It's absolutely wonderful. And I have a bookshelf of hundreds of books. I love every single one of them. And I know who that person was personally. So it's wonderful.
Oh, wow.
So The Light in 9/11, Shocked by Kindness, Healed by Love. This is a book that we can purchase where?
It's on Amazon, the most amazing business platform in the universe.
Yeah.
It's available on Kindle.
Yeah.
Kindle
yeah.
and paperback. I'm self-published under Cosmina Enlightened Publishing. And just to finish, so people aren't not like, what the heck? Cosmina is a brand of kindness. It's a made-up word, meaning where coziness meets glamour, because in that moment of recognizing that women, no one was taking care of women, I started taking care of all my friends and the women I knew who needed care by knitting for them and knitting them these huge, huge, big, beautiful wool shawls called, ultimately, my third friend I knit for named it. She called it a Cosmina. She's like, it's so cozy.
Oh.
It feels like a big hug. And then she caught herself in the mirror and went, oh, but it's so glamorous. It looks like a Pashmina. And I said, and she said, no, it's a Cosmina. And the name stuck. And then it became the name of the brand, which is Cosmina Enlightened Living. So Cosmina is really an adjective meaning warmth, comfort, care, consideration, grace, and decency. The Cosmina brand has many, many possible avenues it can take. I've got the book is actually year 5 in a 20-year campaign to bring Cosmina, the brand, to the world, because it is so much to explain that I had to back up and realize that my time will be best spent speaking in public. So you can't be a credible public speaker without a book. And at the same time, I realize it's very hard for me to tell this story, as you can tell. So there's actually 2 more books behind this.
Yes.
So, because it's that big. But we can change the world. And
yes.
What I'm hoping today with this book is that I meet people and they trust me. I just want you to trust me, because I'm going to throw some stuff that's going to take a leap of faith to go with. And by the time the third book is out, So the second book is a macro study of where we are in our culture and why we're here. And the third book is Our Beautiful Future, which is a future of spiritual enlightenment, but a pragmatic version of it.
Well, you will let me know each time those books come out, and you'll come back
Done.
And we'll talk about them. Absolutely, absolutely.
Would
All
love
right.
nothing
so you
more.
Have,
thank you, Randy. I really appreciate
you're
it.
You're welcome. You have a website, lisaluckett.com, LisaLuckett.com, and I would imagine that
yes.
you can be contacted there.
Yes.
And,
Lisa at LisaLuckett is great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah. you can also be emailed at Lisa@LisaLuckett, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay,
for sure.
Beautiful.
And that's the
beautiful.
Author website. There's also a Cosmina website, and which are linked, you know, but yeah, you can find me lots of ways. It's
okay.
the
and
technology
Cosmina
of the world is fascinating.
Cosmina. N-A. Okay, I just want people to know it. Okay.
Yeah, Cosmina, and it's because I didn't know how to spell Pashmina, because I'm a terrible speller. So just so you know, back to those faults. Yep, there we go.
I love it. I love how names come, you know, when you think about bands and stuff like that. And like the Beatles
yep.
said, you know, when they said they were calling themselves the Beatles, people were like, what? It's an insect.
Right.
You know?
What a weird name. Yep.
Right. But anyway, right. yes, this is how names get born. Well, we're out of time, but this has been absolutely wonderful.
Good.
I hope you had a great time. I know that you
I
were
did. I
having
had
a hectic
time.
Morning and that you, you know, weren't feeling necessarily prepared, but it came out wonderfully. So thank you, Lisa. It's been a pleasure to meet you. We will have more time together, I promise.
I look forward to it, Randy. Thank you so much. And to all your beautiful listeners, just have the best day. Love you all.
Thank you. We love you too. So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. I hope you've enjoyed this week of shows dedicated to 9/11. And tomorrow I will be doing my show where I take your calls and answer your questions about narcissistic abuse. And you can also call and share whatever you've experienced. So many people are listening. They need to hear what you have to say. And the call-in number would be 424-220-1801. It is at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.